talking. We're going talking today where things are popping. The Marian way, we're going to drop in on discussions of the day on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, we're going debating. We're going to debate very loud and we'll be laughing and floating high on a cloud. Phones are ringing from listeners all around on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, and we'll guess and goof and talk on Exchange. Read, debate, and think it's Exchange. Tune in, we're on. Turn on, I'm in. It's on today. The Exchange Club.
And away we go. It's a Getaway Friday, Friday, March the 15th, 2024, 12 and a half minutes past the hour. Joined here on the Exchange Club by Matt Morgan and Pastor Craig. All kinds of interesting stuff going on in the world as we know it. But Pastor Craig, study his word coming up after this show today, 1:15 until 2 p.m. Matt and I will be along tonight from 8:15 until 10 p.m. What's coming up next hour, Pastor?
We're going to look at some news
that we won't hear on this show.
That's not carried by the other media.
The other media.
Yes.
Now, when you initially said that, what is the theory, true theory behind it?
Actually, what it was is they are big news stories, but you don't hear them on the major media.
Now, why do you think?
Because they aren't of broad interest. Let's face it, on ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, you have a limited amount of time that you can do a limited amount of stories and a limited amount of time you can devote to those stories. So they're going to be political stories. They're going to be major world events. So these don't get a lot of play.
But wouldn't the problem be, because it is always the even if you are aware of these stories, it is the quandary of news directors who make these decisions. I've got 26 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And what do people want? Because it can go two ways. Number one, okay, well, let me just say I'm creating the news, so I'm going to lead with a happy, broad story. Okay, and I'm going to leave that story off that was more covered by other people and well-known. Well, the first thing people are going to say is they're going to say, you're irrelevant. What kind of news organization are you? You didn't cover that story that is the number one news story of the day. And number two, you might not be as watched because everybody does want to hear about that other news story. So those two channels are talking about the murder and you're talking about a special plant that grew up. It's darned if you do, darned if you don't.
I agree. I mean, I wouldn't want to be the news director. I wouldn't want to have to make those calls. So, you know, some of the things that I highlight, for instance, if there was over the weekend, there were 25 Christians killed in Nigeria because there's ongoing persecution in Nigeria. Well, once in a while you hear those things, but it's an ongoing situation. Like, for instance, last year in Nigeria, over 6,000 Christians were killed by small groups, Fulani herdsmen. So that's something that doesn't get a big play, but it relates, it's relative to, I mean, it's of an interest to a certain segment.
Well, it's interesting to me, just the news in general, because there are certain things people really do want to hear about. As much as people might become very... hypocritical of other people, they do want to hear about it. And if you do a story on a murder in town, most everybody wants to know.
They want to know.
They want to know. And if they can say, oh, that's bad news, don't cover bad news, da-da-da-da-da, well, guess what? Every time there's a drug bust, the Marmet group puts the press release out.
Right.
So, you know, they don't want you to tell people? Well, of course they do.
Right, exactly.
And you don't want to know? Well, of course you do.
Right.
So there we are.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's a weird thing. That's why this whole idea of good news, anybody who ever, I'm not saying you can't cover good news at all. I'm not saying that at all. Feel-good stories are great. But if you have a murder in town, or if you have a drug overdose, or a famous person dies, if you don't cover that just because it's a negative story, why are you in the news business?
I agree. I mean, yeah, we always hear that stuff about, well, there isn't enough good news on the news. Well, yeah, but It's the bad news that is news.
Yeah.
That people want to know. I mean, you know, I would certainly like to hear some good news stories, but not at the expense of, you know, we had tornadoes in Western Ohio and over 6 people were killed. Well, that's news that people have an interest in knowing it. And if my good news stories gets bumped out because of what's going on weather-wise, you know, fatalities, things like that, so be it.
Right, and it is the nature of the news. So as somebody new in this biz, what do you make of that, Matt?
Well, I mean, I think that human nature, we're just kind of naturally drawn toward negative things more so than positive things. And I think that there's overwhelmingly a lot more positive things that happen than negative things. So I think we're almost more inclined to look towards the negative because, like, we see people doing good every day almost.
Yeah, but what is news? News is that of which, what you just said, that of which is out of the ordinary. So if you're saying there's more good and all that, that's ordinary. Mm-hmm. The murder is out of the ordinary.
That's what I mean. Like, I think that, like, just doing good things is, like, almost just kind of expected of you. So, like if you, like, say some lady, like, cleaned out her pantry and just started donating, and I had been donating food to the food pantry for, like, you know, 10, 20 years. Like, you can make a news story out of that, but, like, I mean, it's not necessarily expected of you, but, like, it's not like it's too, like, absurd, you know what I mean? But, like, crime and, like, especially, like, the murder, like, he listed there, things like that are very much considered, like, out of the ordinary, so those are the news stories.
And speaking of news, we've got to open up this episode with this news because it's relevant to us, and it is a news story this week. On Wednesday, it was announced that Thunderbolt Patterson will be a part of the WWE Hall of Fame Class of 2024. This is short, so I'm going to read this. It's very, very nice. A hugely influential, although often overlooked figure in sports entertainment history, Patterson's captivating abilities on the microphone inspired a generation of talkers that followed in his footsteps. Growing up in Iowa, Patterson moved to Texas and worked for the legendary promoter Dory Funk Sr., father of WWE Hall of Famers Dory Funk Jr. and Terry Funk, where he began performing incredible interviews using a delivery inspired by Black Southern pastors. Patterson was also a contemporary of WWE Hall of Famer Dusty Rhodes and was often credited with inspiring the American Dream's charismatic persona. Patterson's work as a captivating performer was self-evident, but he was also a fierce advocate for the health and welfare of competitors outside of the ring. His legacy as a showman with his signature quick punches, his incredible blend of power and speed, and his compassion for his fellow man live on as an influence that can still be seen in the ring today. And when I got this news, I just thought, this is great, because this man started in 1964. This is the 60th anniversary of his start in the wrestling business. He has had issues with promoters over the years over race. Got to remember, when he started wrestling, 1964, Martin Luther King was still alive. Bobby Kennedy was still alive. The Watts riots had not happened yet. The Democratic Convention of 1968 had not happened yet. This man was headlining in arenas in the South where they would buy a ticket to see him, and then he could not stay at a certain hotel or drink from a certain drinking fountain. What a life it was. So to go into the Hall of Fame and still be cognizant and still be there to do it. And a lot of people thought this would never happen because Thunderbolt, as he admitted this morning on the air, was very bitter toward the wrestling business. He was blackballed for a period of time for not accepting lower money and trying to form a union to help people's welfare in the business that didn't go over. Promoters didn't like that in those days. People thought he would never accept this, but he did. And now he's calling it the greatest, he thinks it will be the greatest day of his life, and it probably will, especially coming at this point in his life, 82 and a half years old.
I can imagine that, like, I don't know how long he actually wrestled for, but I think when you do something, especially to the extent in which he did, like, he made it a career. So, like, if you make it in any, like, sports or entertainment industry as long as he did, I think that, I think that it probably would be the best day of your life if you were ended up being put in the Hall of Fame. You're considered one of the best to ever do it.
I just think what he went through makes it even more poignant at this point. Yes. And also age, I think, makes it so poignant. Because I think people thought it would never happen.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Now, Pastor, did you ever have a chance to meet Thunderbolt through many of his trips through here?
I have not.
Never have.
I have not had a
chance. Oh, my. You got to do that. That's an experience in and of itself.
I'm looking forward
Thunderbolt
to it.
Thunderbolt is an interesting person. I like him a lot. But he's very entertaining. He's got a way of speaking that's all his own. He's got his own opinions. I've enjoyed him. He's been through here. I was trying to think of the times, but he's been through here at least four times and spent extended periods of time here. Mm-hmm. And he's always fine. I mean, I'm always fine with him when he's here. I mean, he's easy to deal with.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's something that this will be happening.
Well, I'll get to meet him this time.
Yep, he'll be making a lot of people when we brought him in. It's funny because I'll have him on my show usually that week as the main guest and kind of a co-host. And people will ask him to stick over on their shows.
Yeah.
Because you can ask him about the wrestling career, but he pays attention to the news. He pays attention to everything. A very religious man, no doubt about it. If you listen to his interviews, now he might not have the same philosophy as other people do, but he's got his own feeling about things, and he's just, I don't know. There has never been anybody who talked like him. And now, they say black Southern pastors, and I asked him about that this morning, and he said, it's not like he watched them and thought that's what he was going to do. The way he talks, I would not say that that's what it is, really. I don't get that impression.
Mm-hmm.
But he just speaks in a whole different cadence and vernacular than anybody. It's very interesting to listen to. I've always been entertained by him. Plus, he's always got a cowboy hat on. He's just a different... He's got his own way about him, and he's fun. He's a lot of fun.
And he still gets around good.
For 83, yeah, he's still on his feet. Last time I saw him, he was using a cane, but that was about it. Still, he would still go up and down steps and do what needed to be done. And always very cordial to people. Very, very cordial to people. I never saw him be dismissive or rude to somebody. Mm-hmm. Now, he'll get in a debate on the radio with people, but I never saw him be rude to somebody.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, you can't be rude to people.
Well,
that's no good.
But there are
some people can.
I mean, there are people that do.
When Gallagher came to town, that was up and down from time to time, depending on who the person was. And there have been others who have come who weren't always the kindest to people. But
you know, you don't have to go back through this, but. It's funny because I haven't listened to any of those shows when Gallagher was here.
Oh.
But it's funny how, I mean, I've heard about how rough it was when Gallagher was around. And was that more his personality that rubbed people wrong?
You know, I could never figure Gallagher out fully. I believe even when he died, I had just spoken to him. He would call me and try to run ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just spoken to him maybe a month before he died, and in explaining him on social media when he died, it was even hard to explain because I didn't want to lie, but it's hard to explain him because he did such amazing things for me that nobody would do. When he retired from stand-up comedy, he came on my show and announced it. It became a national story. He flew himself at his own expense, never asked, there wasn't even a discussion, flew himself into Marion, Ohio, paid for his own hotel, paid for his own food, never asked for money for anything, co-hosted my show every morning. Now, that was the good. And he was entertaining. If you listen to those shows, they're entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also, he could be very dismissive of people, guests. He could get in arguments with people. He could say things that if you heard them, you would find them volatile. I mean, I remember the last time he came and he stayed a week during the popcorn. And that was another time he drove himself in and it was all his expense. He came in and during the break of a show, which is 10 minutes here, he got angry. I can say it now because he's gone. He did not have a good relationship with his mother or his brother, who were still living at that time. And his mother was quite elderly. And somehow we got into the conversation on the show about that. Well, during the break, he was very unhappy that we had even broached that subject. So during the break, there were a couple people in the studio, and he got angry and let people know that he let me know that he was angry. Why are you bringing that up? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then he stormed out the door during the break, but he knew what time we were coming. It was only 10 minutes. He came back in, and it was never talked about again, like it never happened. That was him. I think he was a little bipolar.
I was just going to ask about that.
Yeah, that's what I always interpreted it as. But a nice man. I mean, would do what you asked him to do. It was very strange.
Yeah.
So I guess if you're going to be around these brilliant people, and he was brilliant. I mean, he wrote, and I don't think his brain ever shut off. If you're going to be around these people, I guess you have to understand, you can't be a sensitive person. Because they're not, it's not about you. They're not taking shots at you.
Right.
They're just, that's how they operate.
That's how they
operate. And Thunderbolt, to me, I never felt operated that way. Like I said, if you're going to argue with him, he's going to argue back. But, you know, you're picking the argument.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Well, I mean, that makes for good radio, though. You got to have the arguments.
Yeah, but Gallagher, a lot of his happened off the radio. And I think that's
so
where
they were more like legitimate arguments than like debates.
I think he was angry that we brought up his mother. I think he didn't want to talk about it, but it wasn't an ongoing anger.
I see.
Clearly, once that few minutes was over, it was over. And the other piece, obviously, to Thunderbolt is the fact that he's asked me to induct him into the Hall of Fame. So I don't know how that happens, but there you go.
Exciting.
That's very interesting. I mean, that says a lot about what Thunderbolt thinks about you.
It is very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, again, that should say something to the people around here about the man.
Right.
You know, he didn't have to do that.
No.
So, there you go. We'll see what happens. You know, maybe I'll be in Philadelphia. You never can tell. It's quite a stage, to be honest with you. That's the interesting thing. You know, we just aren't finished with the negotiations yet. But it's quite a stage. Like I say, I know the Wells Fargo Center, where it happens, is sold out, over 21,000 people. I know that it will be broadcast live across the Peacock Network at 10 p.m. on that night. It's a tremendous platform, and I really am just so happy for him, because I think people are going to find him again, because he's still all the way there, and he can still deliver a promo, and I think autograph signings and personal appearances are going to pick up for him tenfold after this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy for him at this point in his life. It's a nice thing.
Yeah.
And he's happy. Is it better when it comes late in life?
I think maybe so. I really do think maybe so. Because you've been retired long enough to really reflect on it. And you know, you said that he had some. If it had happened earlier, he wouldn't accept it.
I think 10 years ago he wouldn't have,
because of some bitterness and things. And I think that the later in life it happens, it gives you that chance to get far enough away from the situation, put it in its proper context of the time, and maybe to get over some of that bad feeling. And
I just am so curious to see what he's going to say, because I know there is still some hostility.
Right.
I mean, it didn't go away, and you can't script that man.
Right.
So once it's live and he's out there, you're at the mercy. You might complain about it when it's over, but I really don't know what'll come out of his mouth.
Right.
It could be interesting.
But I think it says something, though, that they are inducting him into the Hall of Fame because he did have somewhat of a reputation as being difficult to work with, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And so, you know, that they're willing to overlook some of that, you know, and induct him into the Hall of Fame.
You know, that whole difficulty to work with thing, though, I can see it, but I also think that I think some of that really was when you blackball somebody, you try to get people not to work with them. And if you circulate a rumor that they're hard to work with, some people won't even approach them.
Right.
So I believe that. Does he have his own feeling on things? If you want him to do something, is he going to want you to explain why you want him to do it? Yes. But in the end, I don't ever remember something I wanted him to do that he wouldn't do.
Right.
So I don't know if I can say he's hard to work with.
Yeah.
And God knows people have heard him on this station. I mean, he's guest co-hosted with me on 4 separate weeks, and it was always entertaining. You know, you certainly didn't have to come in anything with those shows, but Thunderbolt's going to be on there, so there you are. 740-383-9944, if you have anything to say, 740-383-9944. And there is an irony, because I'm sure it wasn't timed out, 60th anniversary of the start of his career, 64 to 2024, and also it's happening in Philadelphia, Constitution Hall 10 minutes away, Liberty Bell 10 minutes away. I mean, there's a lot of irony in this whole thing. Considering the story and the whole spiel of the bit. Well, let's talk a little bit about Ray Grogan being on the show yesterday and the Miranda McGinnis bit, because that's certainly news that's exclusive to us. If you didn't tune in yesterday, you found out that there has been an ongoing investigation by at least one police officer that I'm aware of, and now the Marion County Prosecutor's Office, into Miranda McGinnis possibly misappropriating funds. And within the next 30 days, we should know where that's going to be. The case is not over, but that's all we can say at this point, because lawyers are bound by ethical rules. What do you make? People have wanted to know what's going on locally. Well, now you know.
I think it's good that it was good to find out that there was, it was still an open case, so to speak, that there was an investigation, because there were so many things said there, those last few months of last year and the beginning of this year. There were so many accusations being made. I think that it's good that it's being looked at, and that something definite is going to be said.
Matt, you were there the night that she allegedly, and I have to say allegedly, because I was there too. I can't say that she admitted to a misappropriation of funds.
It was more of like I could see how you would think that she did.
I can see why they turned it over to a police officer.
Yeah.
But I don't know that's what she did. I really don't know. She didn't know that question was coming. If they knew she had misappropriated funds, why didn't they prepare her to answer it? What did they think, she was going to leave the building? I mean, I didn't quite understand a lot of that.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, they had the receipts for the, where she had paid a fine as a interest, I think she listed it as, something like that.
Yeah, she had paid something that it was not appropriated for by counsel, and admitted that she had done that. But, by the way, it was her deputy auditor who had done it. It's just that she signed off on it. I think that's what the story is.
The deputy auditor.
Yeah, well, there's that. There's that. Well, I'm sure he's in on this, too.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, in on, I would imagine the investigation has to revolve around him.
Right.
I don't know how it couldn't.
I just had questions about him the whole time. And I know, you know, we've talked about it. But I've just had questions about him. He's, you know, the one person that spanned the two administrations. And he's obviously an integral part of what's going on. But he never seems to come up that much in the discussions.
We shall see what happens. Now, also, we shall see what happens next Tuesday. Although it's the wind has been taking out a lot of people's sails here in Ohio, because we now know what the presidential matchup is going to be, so people aren't going to be going to the polls Tuesday to vote in a presidential primary like they normally have in past years. But we do have a lot of consequential races here in Ohio. We certainly have the Republican primary in this district for Representative Tracy Richardson and Wesleyan Davis. We had Tracy Richardson on Wednesday morning. We have the Senate primary, who's going to face Sherrod Brown. We got Bernie Moreno, who's backed by Trump. We've got Dolan, who's backed by DeWine. We've got Secretary of State Husted, who's backed by nobody, but certainly is the Secretary of State, so people know who he is. That's who's going to face Sherrod Brown. We've got the Democratic primary here, Steve Thomas and Tammy Wilson, to see who's going to face Jim Jordan. So some things will happen on Tuesday. What do you think, Pastor? What's going to happen?
It's probably going to be, I don't know. I think I could be totally wrong, but I think, you know, it could be a light turnout at the polls just because the presidential nominations have, you know, have been selected, so to speak. And even though it was headed that way, and even though people probably had already made up their mind who would they vote for, I think the fact that they've already clinched the nomination, it might keep some people home.
Well, it's interesting to me because, and we did have Steve Thomas on yesterday on the program. I honestly, until the week before, wasn't even aware he was running. The Democratic primary has been very quiet, but these two Republican primaries have been nasty, nasty. And Tracy Richardson said on Wednesday when she was on that this is the nastiest, forget counting the mains, that this is the nastiest thing that has ever happened in her political career, this primary. And it's Republican versus Republican. It's harsh.
It's a cutthroat business.
Well, not always. Saying the Democrats really haven't. I mean, Thomas did not really go after Wilson yesterday, and I haven't heard her go after him. That Senate race is ugly, but you expect that with a statewide race. But this local rep race in a primary? Ooh.
Yeah.
That's ugly.
And it's interesting because, you know, there's some big money behind it on one side. And, you know, and the big money behind it on one side, it's not just the person running against Tracy Richardson. There's some big money behind a group of about 15 people that are running against various representatives.
Well, it was fascinating to me because we and it's been a long time since this happened, and I'm sure it has happened before, so I don't want to say it's an only once-in-a-lifetime thing. But when I'm doing this interview, when we've gotten to the point where we're calling people on their DUIs, I thought, boy, we're getting down to the nitty-gritty here. We're really cutting low.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does that matter? I was confused when that came up.
Does a DUI matter?
Yeah, that you can't hold office if you've had a DUI? That's a heavy knock?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that you can't hold office with a DUI, but I mean, I would certainly.
What does it say, though? I guess, what does it say?
I would certainly question why you have gotten a DUI or DUI.
We know why you got a DUI. You drove drunk.
Yeah, but it's more of like a why. Like, it just seems like a stupid, irresponsible thing to do, and do you want to elect somebody who does stupid and irresponsible things?
You can't make policy if you've had a DUI. I don't know that I understand
that. It's just irresponsible.
It was a knock in the same manner like you mentioned when Matt was talking to the Libertarian candidate and he's talking about Biden's speech and he said, well, and he probably had a shot of B12 or whatever it was.
Yep. You know. It's beneath. Yeah. It's beneath these people to do that.
Right.
And I like some of these people, but it's beneath you to do that.
It is.
Why does it have to be so ugly?
Right.
I mean, is it really about the job?
Right.
I mean, I don't get that.
You know, I would say the same thing, you know, on the presidential thing, it's the same people that I could never vote for Trump because of all his nasty tweets that he sends out. Really? I mean, are you gonna vote for a president based on his tweets that he sends out, or are you gonna vote for a guy who says what he's gonna do?
Well, I'm to the point where there are a few people in the political world that I really think are not good people, but it's few and far between. It's not, my goodness, if you paid attention to everything right now, you'd think 90% were awful people.
Right.
I just don't understand that.
Right.
Now, policy, oh yes, there's disagreements on policy with everybody.
Right.
But not the person. And when we're talking about DUIs, we're talking about the person.
Right.
I mean, I guess it would just depend on, like, how many DUIs he had and how, like, common and like that kind of
Why is that a thing?
What do you mean?
I mean, why is that competency to hold the office if you've had a DUI?
I'll tell you what. There's probably 95% of those politicians out there who that could have gotten DUIs, but the situation or whatever, they didn't.
You know what? I'll tell you what bothers me as a media, hopefully a journalist. You know, I always think, every time I say journalist, I think, where's your journal? You know? But what bothers me, and maybe it's because this week I've had so many politicians on. We did the television taping the other night with Mary Ellen, and I had Steve Thomas on yesterday, and Tracy Richardson on Wednesday, and Ray Grogan on yesterday, and there's just been a lot lately. And you know what bothers me is that we always say we want the politician to tell us the truth. Media says it. The people say it. But yet, when they do that, if they say what's opposite of what we want them to say, we knock them for saying it, and we knock the media for putting it out there. Well, listen, that's what you wanted to know.
Right.
They told you the truth.
Right.
They didn't dance around it.
Right.
You're angry about that? I mean, you asked. You wanted to know. You got it.
And the other thing, too, I think we unrealistically expect our politicians to be perfect. The perfect example, the DUI. I mean, come on. How many people have DUIs? Are you going to totally dismiss them because, well, they can't do anything because they've had a DUI? Well,
divorces? That was a big thing for a long time. Couldn't be divorced and be a politician.
If I looked at a whole bunch of people that I knew, like off the top of my head, who had DUIs, I would say that they're not fit to hold public office.
But because of the DUI is the question. You can take all that other stuff about them, but I'm talking strictly on the DUI.
Well, I mean, it's just one of those things where, like, it's just common sense to when you drink, you don't drive, okay? It's just stupid and irresponsible. So do I want somebody who's in charge of the national government to be stupid and irresponsible? No, I really don't.
So everybody is perfect. It is stupid and irresponsible to drive drunk. I don't disagree with that. I don't agree with that point at all. I disagree with that point. But I don't think that makes you a stupid and irresponsible person because you did something that was stupid and irresponsible.
I agree. But I think if you have, like, multiple DUIs and it's a common occurrence, it's
well, that's what we're saying here. I think we're saying you have a DUI, and I'm going to use this against you.
I don't know.
The impression I got the other morning, so I'm going to go back and listen to it and find something else.
I mean, if everybody you know who could have potentially got a DUI, that's going to be a large group of people. Are they automatically disqualified? The only difference between them and the person is they got caught, and the others didn't get caught. But it doesn't really speak to their ability to do the job.
But it probably will impact some voters, and this is the problem. So there you go.
It just shows a willingness to do irresponsible things.
But do you have to get nasty when your opponent gets nasty? Because certainly in these races, unfortunately, whoever started it, you know, it's kind of like as a child, both sides have gotten nasty now. All sides have gotten nasty. Moreno, Husted.
Well, I would say that.
You will not find Husted, Moreno, Dolan, Richardson, or Davis. They've all put out negative ads at this point. No matter who started it, they've all done it.
Everybody's done it.
Do you have to do it because somebody's doing it to you?
Well, I think it's just kind of one of those things, you know. Like, I mean, when I can't honestly recall vividly, but I don't remember, for example, like Donald Trump. A whole lot of his campaigns were bashing, or his, like, television ads were just hating on Hillary. And a lot of Hillary's ads were not, I mean, they weren't, I mean, obviously they weren't, like, the nicest towards Trump, but, like, it was more of, like, a, like, I want to do this. Do you want a guy who does this, or do you want me kind of thing? Like, it was more of a, like, an advertisement than just a smear campaign.
So you're saying you have to be negative then because you lost.
Yes.
Okay.
I think that everybody saw how well it worked when Donald Trump just went out there and started bashing everybody.
I don't think it was the first, though.
That's a strategy.
It might have been more extreme than we had seen in modern times, but he wasn't the first.
By no means the first.
I mean, go check out 92. I mean, they were all over Bill Clinton before he was ever elected about his women. I mean... Mm-hmm. That certainly wasn't something I'm sure his daughter wanted to hear at that particular point, or his wife. They were all over George W. Bush for being dumb.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he particularly liked that. They were all over Obama. I mean, there for somebody to say there was no racism involved in that is foolish. There was, you know, it's just the way it goes, I guess. Do you have to do that, though?
No, you don't have to do it. But it's too easy to get to do. It's too easy to respond in nasty to someone being nasty.
I mean,
it's hard to maintain the high ground.
I would rather that there wasn't so much negativity because, I mean, a lot of the times I feel that if I don't see any ads of you describing what you want to do, like you know, like I want to do this, I support these things, like it kind of bothers me because like if your whole campaign, like your whole campaign is based off of like running smear campaigns, and I don't think you have any stances. I think you just kind of don't want the other person in there. You're just hating on them. I don't even know what you want.
Well, that's become the game now, which is, you know, it's you don't have to know anything about me. I just have to make you hate them.
Right. That's what it boils down to. Yeah.
It's the way it is, unfortunately. I mean, I certainly don't think that's the way it should be, but, no. You know, that's what people respond to.
Yep.
So that's what we have to do. Do people ever tell you why they're good, or do they tell you why the other people are bad? In any medium that's competitive.
Well,
tell me why you're the best. Don't tell me why they stink. Tell me why you're the best. If you have to tell me why they stink, that's why I go out of my way and have always gone out. You will not find me knock another station on here unless they've done something completely egregious.
Right.
Like Air, Amos, and Andy.
Because if you have to knock somebody else, the question is why?
Why? Why am I doing that?
Right.
So, you know, let's be real here. But people who've knocked this station, which clearly has happened in the past, whatever.
Whatever.
I don't even respond to it.
Right.
Because I know why they're knocking it, because we're better. I mean, you know, I say it's very elitist, but they wouldn't be doing it if we were nothing.
You know, I heard a national pastor one time say, you know, and because he's a national pastor, you know, he gets criticized all the time. And, you know, his philosophy is don't respond to any of it.
Exactly.
Just don't respond to any of it.
I think that's right. Somebody said die by a million paper cuts if you get into a war with somebody like that. And I think right.
I don't think that responding to it's really the best way to go a lot of the time.
But people get angry.
I mean, because if you respond, like, the only thing you're doing is drawing more attention to it. So, like, the people who didn't know I don't know exactly what you're referring to in terms of the man, but, like people, a lot of the times, like, people will get, bashed for something, and then they'll come out to defend themselves. And then all they did, for instance, it happens a lot with, like, social media, like YouTuber kind of thing. Like, so one YouTuber will say that one is all bad, and then the one will make a video to defend themselves, and then all of a sudden the only thing they did was turn their audience against them, so they turned their own audience against them, because now they've just blown up this whole idea. And now the ones, I mean, you're always going to have the loyalist people, but like, some of them just leave.
Yeah, but do you really care what people say about you? I mean, honestly, I who cares?
I mean, in terms of politics and things like that, I mean, that's kind of the name of the game.
Well, herein lies the problem.
And in some cases, just responding to the other person lends a bit of credibility to the whatever that was that they said.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that you have to respond to it.
And repeat it.
That, you know, that lends some credibility to the first thing that was said, whether it was credible or not.
You know, I'm still shocked to this point. Now, again, people can deny whatever, and they can just say, oh, you're reading too much into something, which is what they like to do when they try to play it very highbrow. But recently, I ran into somebody who I've known for a long, 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 long time. Now, I don't know that I've done anything personal to that person, but they were very chilly to me. I mean, we exchanged little pleasantries, but they were very chilly toward me. And I know why they were chilly. I know exactly why they were chilly. But this is a show. Now, when we're talking about current events or we're talking about a serious news story, that's one thing. That's not a place to be jokey. You got to know your audience. But like I said earlier, the instance yesterday where I said to somebody walking out of a building that I think I must have done something bad in a past life, and they said, why? And I said, because I'm stuck with you. You know, that is not meant to be serious. And when I come on here talking about past relationships and we're having a good time on this show or Friday night, and I tell you how horrible they were, or they, if you take that seriously, then I think there's something wrong with your life. I mean, let's get real. I mean, I'm not using any names. I'm not citing specific examples. I'm not saying you're a terrible person. Can we not have any fun? Do we not have any sense of humor? How uptight are we?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, I say horrible stuff to the people around. I mean, how many times have we brought light to Sean's weight? How many times have I made fun of Terry and having food all over his shirt? How many times have I said things about Adam singing? How many times have I gotten every Friday night you can tune into me and Carrington having an argument about something. I've made fun of her bathing. I've made fun of your bathing. I mean, let's be do people stop coming back? I mean, right. What is the problem here?
Right.
I mean, what is the difference? If I see you every day, I guess I can make fun of you. If I don't, then it's serious. Come on.
I honestly think that's kind of it, because I like, almost the more comfortable you are with somebody, the more you're like, I bet you I could get away with, like, you know, poking fun a little bit. But like,
I think
like,
fun is fun.
Like, even if we were like acquaintances and I just like walked by and said like an off-putting comment that I thought was a joke, you'd be like, man, we don't even talk like that.
So it's the relationship you have with the person.
I think so.
Well, I don't know, because I think relationships change.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly, like we said earlier, if you tell somebody they look good every day, and then one day you don't, there's going to be a, it doesn't mean they look bad. It's just, oh, why didn't they say it today? Well, if you have some kind of close relationship with somebody for a while, you're probably not going to say things that you might say in reflecting back on a story.
Right.
Because you're trying to get a punchline now out of it.
Yeah, I'm kind of...
I mean, you've never been serious in the moment, but then when you look back on it, I certainly wouldn't have been telling the story about getting engaged without my knowledge when I was still with that person. I mean, that would have been pretty stupid.
Right.
But now it's a joke.
Now it's funny.
Yeah, and I certainly wouldn't tell the story about the wedding card that I sent the day after when there was still so much hostility about it. But years later, it's a joke. But they are true events. They're no lies.
We had an incident with myself and Nate and Terry on
absolutely
the show with no name.
Yeah,
we had several.
And it was
and
depending on what day it was, and what yeah, time it was.
But one of the incidences was where Terry was the butt of a joke. And he had no clue, but because he didn't know he had no clue, he was just going right on and saying some things and sounding really good. And, you know, Nate and I are just rolling on the floor laughing because he doesn't even realize he's been made fun of. But you can go back and Nate and I were talking about this the other day. He did a little Facebook Live for the Amber and Nate Adventures. And we were
that an unauthorized plug?
I think, yes, that was.
I know. Oh, man. It's going to come down.
It was a shameless
plug. Oh, man alive.
Oh, boy. Folks, I may not be back next hour.
You know, somebody, before we get back to that show, it's funny. Years ago, I was with the late, great Madge Cooper, and we were on the air, and it was a 70, a 60, it was an anniversary at WMRN that we had all gotten. She didn't work there anymore, I still did, but we all got together for this anniversary. But she's doing the anniversary because, you know, she's the grand dame of radio, and she's interviewing a guy who went on to Detroit radio to become very well known, who was on WMRN. He's calling in for the anniversary, and he said, well, I'm hosting the Ford Motor show up here, and she said, you weren't authorized to make that plug on the air. We're going to have to talk. And it was so fun. And I always think of that moment when somebody, who cares if you plug something?
Right.
You have to be listening to us to hear the plug. So,
yep.
Okay, that's my point. Joke.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So anyhow, you know, I mean, Nate and I, we were telling that story, and yeah, Terry was the butt of a joke, but it's funny. And, you know, I guarantee you, if Terry were to listen to the, go to the show archives and listen to it, he would probably think it was pretty funny, too.
Yeah, hindsight.
Yeah, hindsight. It was a funny moment. Somebody's made a joke.
Yeah, and there are very serious moments that in hindsight are funny. I mean, how many times have I, you know, here we go, but how many times have I talked about the breakfast? You know, the breakfast showing up. Do people not get by, am I really being serious about breakfast showing up? I mean, come on. It just gives you something to talk about. It's just mileage. I mean, good Lord. I mean, but I know that there are certain things that I have said that will cause a chilliness with people, and if that does, you know, sorry.
Exactly.
I mean, if everything is as great as you say it is, then you really shouldn't have a problem with what I'm doing.
Exactly.
I mean, things are going pretty good for me, you know?
That's the way to do it.
That's the way to do it. So, better sense of humor, kinder in politics, congratulations to Thunderbolt. We don't know what's going to happen with Miranda, but when we know, we'll tell you.
Yeah. You'll hear it here first.
You'll hear it here first. So it's all kind of a mishmash of things in general. Let's just do this story quick one final time because I don't think we have gotten Pastor's opinion on this. Oh, yeah. The Sally Field story. I love the Field. I love it. And it's an easy one to do in quick time here. Sally Field was nominated for the movie Norma Rae years ago. I think it was the 70s. She was dating Burt Reynolds at the time. They met on the set of Smokey and the Bandit. Burt refused to go to the Oscar ceremony with her, saying, "You really think you're going to win?" Well, she did win, and she dumped him.
I think she did the right thing, dumping him, and there were probably other problems in that relationship.
I don't think that was the only one.
I don't think that was the only one.
No.
Yeah.
Burt got around.
Yeah.
So, but do you ever say that to somebody? I mean, honestly.
No, that's not something you would...
Now, that's in the relationship. Now, you could say that years later, and you could probably even get a joke years later.
Right.
Like, if you were honoring Sally Field, and they brought you up because you had been in a movie together, and you could say, you know, I had a relationship with Sally Field, and when she got nominated for Norma Rae, I went to her, and I wanted to be as encouraging as possible, and I said, "Sally, you really think you're going to win that award?" Well, guess what? She did. And she got rid of me, a non-Academy Award winner.
You could turn it into a joke.
And you would get huge laughter.
Yep.
But in the moment, bad move.
Bad move.
Got any thoughts on that, Matt?
I mean, I think it was always a bad move. I don't think that any... So, in terms of especially a significant other, I don't think you should go hating on your significant other. I think you're supposed to be supportive there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like Pastor Craig said, good on her for ditching him, honestly.
You know what? The other night when Carrington and Matt were over, I showed them, because Phil Donahue is one of my favorites, just because he came from Ohio and he started the talk show. And I was showing them, and I think this proves this point to the nth degree. Phil Donahue was, by the mid-1980s, the number one talk show in the daytime, had been the number one talk show in the daytime for the longest time. And a matter of fact, when Oprah Winfrey was starting her talk show in the mid-80s, which was basically the Phil Donahue show with Oprah Winfrey, she went into the audience, she had the microphone, it was basically a Phil Donahue ripoff. They went to her, her boss went to her and said, "Listen, we know you're never going to beat Phil Donahue. Just do the best you can. We're with you." Well, she did start to beat Phil Donahue. I think almost right out of the bat, she beat Phil Donahue in his own backyard in Chicago. I think part of that was because Phil had been on a long time, and part of that was Oprah was coming off The Color Purple and an Oscar nomination, and she was a woman. Nobody had ever tried that format with a woman.
What is The Color Purple?
It was a big movie at the time.
Okay.
Big movie.
So, for 10 years... I mean, it was Oprah and Donahue. Oprah, and they would try to get the best guests and the best show and try to be the best and blah, 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 blah. Well, Donahue goes off the air after 29 years, and certainly these people did not go on each other's show. Animosity, who's going to be one, who's going to be two. And Phil Donahue, the year he retires, is given the Lifetime Achievement Award by the Daytime Emmys. Who presents it to him? Oprah Winfrey. And what does she say when he, and I thought it was a, because she gives an intro to the video and they show the best of Phil Donahue, but she waits for Phil to come up on stage, and Phil's there with his, this, they're right there together in Radio City, national television audience. She hands the Lifetime Emmy to Phil, and she says, Phil, I just want to say, and you know I believe this, that if you had not opened the door so wide, I don't believe, had there not been a Phil Donahue, there couldn't have been an Oprah Winfrey. And I personally thank you for that.
Class act.
Class act. Right there in front of them.
And it was probably very, very genuine.
I believe she read it.
She really felt that.
So you can be fierce competitors,
but,
and at the end of the day, tell the truth and be honest.
Well, I mean,
and I'm sure that meant something to Phil Donahue.
Yeah. I mean, I think that competitors aren't always like, I mean, you can be a competitor and not be at each other's throat. Like, I mean, that happens in sports all the time. Like, a lot of players from opposing teams will give credit to, like, the opposing team win or lose in the press conference.
Well, I don't know. I think if you like the person and you know that they open the door for you, even if for some reason there's a kerfluffle and you don't like them for a period of time, you still got to tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You still got to say, listen. And I think about that with Thunderbolt. He was one of the greatest, period. If you go to the historians who are unbiased, they're going to tell you he was, that he packed those arenas. So even though you didn't like him for a while because he was trying to unionize, even though you might have thought he was difficult to work with, you got to give the praise one day. You got to say the truth.
Absolutely.
And that's what it is. Pastor Craig coming up here in about 15 minutes. We'll be back tonight, 8:15 to 10. So I'm sure we'll trash somebody tonight.
Very good.
Or at least get somebody angry. I mean, you can't have a show without that. Scott Spears for Matt Morgan and Pastor Craig heading for the dugout.
2326. Also available mobile notary services in Central and Mid-Ohio.
We are proud to present Magnificent Marian Moments. Eber Baker and Alexander Holmes established the town in 1821. By 1840, 570 people resided in the town. 6 years later, Marion boasted a population of 800 people, 3 churches, a private academy, 2 newspaper offices, 21 stores, 1 sawmill, 1 fulling mill, and 1 carding mill also existed in the town in 1846. And now a few words.